Cape Talk. Food with Zola Nene.
This food feature is brought to you by Sushi To Go. Healthy living begins with healthy eating. And download the Sushi To Go ZA app now. Well, now we get a second bite of Zola Nene in her usual role as our food consultant. She is, of course, the Espresso TV chef and herself a cookbook author. Also, one of the judges on the Great South African Bake Off. And that's why it's been quite a while since we've been able to snatch her into studio, because you've been a bit busy. Great to have you back with us.
It's wonderful to be back. I love being here with you, Pippa.
Thanks so much. We love having you. I just have to mention, Mervin and anybody else who is still hankering after their taste of fruitcake of some sort this Christmas, there is actually a very good one that somebody else has made. So if you want to cheat a little bit, I know lots of you making your own is part of the Christmas tradition.
Yeah.
But if you want to save yourself the sweat, you may recall a couple of weeks ago we had Chef Maynard Joubert in studio talking to us about his very lovely, unique home restaurant in Paarl, where he hosts very intimate gourmet gatherings in his house. And he has baked a batch of a couple of hundred Christmas cakes, very rich in fruit, whole cherries, whole nuts. There is a sprinkle of KWV brandy on top as well, I must mention that. So if you don't want alcohol, don't go for this one. But if you do like brandy in your Christmas cake, they are retailing at 250 Rand a piece. And if you would like to order one from Chef Maynard, pop onto his website, www.maynard.co.za. That's spelled M-Y-N-H-A-R-D-T. Maynard.co.za. And get yourself one of his. That's what I've done. I'm cheating. I'm taking every shortcut available to me this year, Zola.
whatever it takes to get through the festive season.
Okay. We're going to get you through the festive season in style with some baking advice and some general cooking advice. It's a general segment today. You can phone on absolutely any foodie topic. But while we wait for the first calls to come through to 021-446-0567, how is the Great SA Bake Off going?
Wonderful, wonderful. Tomorrow is semi-finals, so we're nearing the end, and we're about, you know, you'll soon find out who the winner is. But it's been such a fantastic journey. It's been amazing watching the amateur bakers grow and become brilliant bakers. Mm. And the things that they come up with, I'm still like in awe. I mean, yeah, they're just so creative and they're so passionate about baking. It's just, I love it. I love the show. And I'm not just saying that because I'm part of it. Mm. I've loved it for many, many years. Being part of it has found a new love for me.
The cherry on top of the
Christmas cake.
Okay. I won't ask you to name a favorite dish because we don't want you to be accused of favoritism.
Absolutely.
Heading into the semifinals. Only to say Tuesday the 19th of December is the date to diarise. 8 p.m. is the reveal of the winner. It's on channel 174 on DSTV. That's the BBC Lifestyle channel. So please make a date in your diary to pick up the final. And then you're having a bit of fun after that. You're doing a celebrity bake-off.
Yes, we have a celebrity episode, which is also, you know, a laugh a minute. So yeah, make sure that you catch that one too.
Okay, great. Yeah. So that is BBC Lifestyle Channel 174, The Great SA Bake Off. Okay, our first questions are already through on email, and we're taking your calls as well and your voice note questions on absolutely any foodie topic. And this is one actually that George sent us a while ago, and I've been promising the minute we had you back I would ask you. And it's I think a very practical question. George writes the following: mushroom soup, no matter which variety you make, it never looks nice. It looks a bit like oats porridge. And who wants to serve something that looks like that to your guests? Mm. Is there any way of making it look better? I've thought of adding some magic ingredient that will make it pop with color, but I can't think of what to do. Mm. It is, I mean, some mushrooms are darker than others. You
Absolutely.
Get a slightly darker brown color, but yeah. I hear what he's saying. It is.
It is. I mean, mushrooms themselves, you know, button mushrooms or brown mushrooms, they aren't the most exciting of colors. And especially after you cook them, they go even darker. So, it's difficult to make it colorful in that way. But I recommend maybe doing something to top them. So getting beautiful oyster mushrooms and, you know, sauteing those lightly in butter and putting those on top with a bit of herb. That'll sort of make the entire bowl of soup pop rather than just, you know, that insipid brown mushroomy color. Yeah. So I think that you can do a lot to garnish it. Maybe a croute, a beautiful croute on top with, I don't know, melted cheese or even more sautéed mushrooms on top. Because sliced mushrooms fried look a little bit more impressive than soupy mushrooms.
Great,
so
maybe
save some of the mushrooms and sauté those separately and then pop them on top of the soup just to also bring out the color. Yeah.
Or I'm thinking a little drizzle of creme fraiche with some chives or something to get just a little bit of a different color.
Exactly. So a pop of green is always going to sort of take something really dull and give it a little bit of life. So yeah, a pop of green is always
okay.
Always
so good. George, the answer is nothing you can do about the mushrooms itself. It's all about faking it and making it look better by putting them next to something pretty.
Yeah.
Thanks so much for your email. You can keep those coming to pippah@capetalk.co.za. We had another completely intriguing email come in from Eileen, who has got a touristy tea towel is how she describes it. She said this one came from Scotland and has various Scottish recipes on it, including one for haggis and one for roast venison. And her question is to do, thankfully not with the haggis because I think that might be stretching it, but the roast venison, apart from a 5 kilogram haunch of venison,
wow
that's really feeding an army. But she says that ingredients for the marinade require some chopped up bones. The procedure is to marinate the venison for 2 days, turning it occasionally, and then seal the meat quickly, pour over the marinade and roast on a bed of bones until tender. She asks, have you ever heard of this and why would you do that?
Well, the reason why you have the bones as part of the roasting process is just to add extra flavor, because you're going to use those roasting pan juices as the gravy. So the bones are where the flavor is. So, and also the bones act as a trivet almost and lift the meat off the direct heat of the pan so that the cooking circulates and there's hot air running all the way around. But yeah, mostly for flavor, because what you'll do is once you've roasted it, you'll take the meat out. While the meat rests, you'll use those pan juices with the bones to make your actual sauce or gravy. Yeah.
Okay, fantastic. Thanks. Well, Eileen, let us know firstly where you managed to get a 5 kilogram haunch of venison. But I hope it turns out well if you do give it a bash. Right, we're back to baking, and an anonymous SMS saying that I have a recipe that calls for buttermilk, but I don't want to have to go especially to the store to buy that. Is there something you can substitute, or can you make your own buttermilk?
You can indeed make your own. You can also substitute for amasi. So any recipe that uses buttermilk, amasi is pretty much the same thing, just way, way cheaper, in fact. It's a little bit lumpy. But you know, if you put it into cakes, etc., it's the same end result. But you can make your own. So a cup of milk to a tablespoon of lemon juice or vinegar, leave it to sit for a bit and it thickens up, and you can use that as a buttermilk substitute.
So 1 cup of milk and 1 tablespoon of lemon and vinegar.
Who
knew?
You just put some acid into the milk and it sort of thickens it up a little bit.
I made the other day one of those the Banting Bread premix jobs that called for buttermilk, and I didn't have any, and I raced to my local cafe and they didn't have any either. I used double cream yogurt and it worked out absolutely fine.
Absolutely.
Obviously the tanginess was not quite as tangy as buttermilk would have been, I guess, but as a sort of a textural element, it appeared to be just the same result.
Absolutely. Yeah. So there you go. Yogurt's also a really great substitute.
Okay. Taking your calls for Zola Nene on 021-446-0567. You can send an SMS to 31567 or tweet your question at Cape Talk if you'd prefer. Right. Another SMS saying the cornerstone of almost all dishes, onions, usually followed by garlic. My question is, are there some special ways that chefs chop onions? And secondly, what is the best method to get all the flavor from the garlic? Would you go grated, chopped, or crushed?
Oh, okay. So chopping an onion, chefs will always teach you how to chop it, leaving the root on, just so it's easier. So you cut down the onion as if you're slicing, but not all the way through to the root. And then you slice horizontally to give you sort of squares, if you will, and then across, and it keeps it all neat and it keeps it all the same size. So that's the easiest way or the simplest way to chop an onion. But when it comes to chopping, I always say to people, do what makes you feel comfortable. Yep. Find a knife that's perfect for you and just go slow until, you know, you've had enough practice. When it comes to garlic, so remember with garlic, the finer you crush it, the more garlic flavor you're going to get. So if you chop it really fine or you crush it, it's going to release more flavor. If you use it whole and you roast it really slowly, it's a bit more mellow and a milder flavor. For me, I think that the thing that people go wrong with most when it comes to sauteing onions and garlic is that they put the garlic in at the beginning with the onions
and
garlic burns. And once it's burnt, that bitter garlic flavor stays for the entire dish. So make sure you saute your onions very slowly, and sauteing, it means to cook over sort of medium heat without any color. Okay. So, so very, very slowly so that the onions get all caramelized and sweet. Then add your garlic, and the garlic takes much, much less time, than obviously the onion. So just be careful to put it in too soon in the cooking process.
That's a really good tip, because there's so many recipes that the first step is literally sweat off the onions, garlic, and celery or whatever it is. And you automatically put, you go, well, oh, well, put that in the pan, put that in the pan, put that in the pan, exactly. All at the same time.
Yeah.
And then 9 times out of 10, you end up with that overdone garlic, as you've mentioned. So great suggestion. Okay. Defrosting chicken. So another request for the best way to defrost chicken, because I know a lot of people used to, and I'm hoping it is now only used to, do that under running water. We don't want anyone wasting water doing that anymore.
Absolutely.
Do you recommend defrosting at room temperature or in the fridge?
In the fridge.
Okay.
In the fridge is the safest way. You just never want to play around with chicken and temperatures. Food safety first. So defrost your chicken in the fridge. Yeah, over the entire day. So put it in the morning, and then when you come home in the evening, it'll be defrosted.
Okay.
See, the thing is with doing it at room temperature is that room temperature in South Africa is not the same as in England, for example.
Yes.
You know, it's cold there at this time of the year. So, you know, defrosting things at room temperature means a totally different thing. It's like a fridge for them anyway. So here it's too warm in the summer, especially. So instead of going, yeah, in winter it's okay and in summer it's okay, just say it's never okay and do it in the fridge.
Rather be safe than sorry. Great advice. Right. Let's go to the lines. Anthea has given us a call from Somerset West. Good afternoon, Anthea.
Hi there. Zola, I won your cooking book, and it's absolutely delightful.
Oh, thank you so much.
What I want to know is I enjoyed roasting chicken pieces. I paint it with olive oil and then put spices because I like spicy, but somehow it always comes out dry. Am I overcooking it? What is the average cooking time or roasting time for chicken pieces in the oven?
Oh, that's
thermal oven.
Okay, so that's such a funny question because my dad asks me that every time as well, and I've always got to go, okay, how big is the chicken piece? Is it white meat? Is it red meat? Is it dark meat? Is it, you know, so it depends on the size of your chicken pieces. But for me personally, if I roast chicken thighs and drumsticks at 200 degrees, I roast them for about 30 minutes. And they're perfectly cooked every time. Also, when you find that your chicken is getting very dry, resting chicken is also really important. It helps everything sort of go back to the center and the juiciness, you know, gets maintained by the chicken. So maybe reduce your cooking time and keep testing it. Listen, until you know, poke the chicken nearest to the bone, see if the juices run clear and you know you're good to go. Because a lot of people are very nervous about, you know, raw chicken, etc. So they keep it in a bit longer. But practice makes perfect, I think.
Thank you very much. Have a good day.
Thanks,
my
Anthea.
Pleasure.
And keep enjoying the cookbook. Simply delicious it is.
It is.
In Somerset West. Right, here's an interesting SMS asking, do you think a microwave Christmas will work? Electricity is so expensive these days. I'd rather use my oven for the biscuits, mince pies, etc. Any ideas? I do have a recipe for one, but I don't want to waste good ingredients and have a flop. Do you use a microwave often?
I don't. I don't cook in a microwave very often. I mean, I use it for warming up food, but not necessarily for cooking things. But there are a lot of recipes for microwave cakes, and people have mastered the art of using microwaves. I remember my mom had a book when I was younger. AMC did a microwave cookbook. So it's very possible. I myself don't do it, so I can't really give you great advice on how to do it. Well,
okay. I mainly use mine for defrosting and heating up, same as you. But for example, I've got a wonderful butternut soup that you do in the microwave. It takes about half an hour. It's a Thai butternut soup, and I've never had a flop with that.
Yeah, my brother makes rice in the microwave all the time.
Yep.
I know people who cook their gem squash only in the microwave. I know my sister does her baked potato, baked loosely. Obviously, it's not really baked. baked in the microwave as well. So a lot of people do use it for cooking, and good on you if it cuts your cooking time by a quarter or whatever it is, then keep doing it. Yeah.
Absolutely. So if not, why not? But maybe just do a little bit of research and look for a site that is dedicated to microwave cooking, and you'll find recipes that have been specially adapted for that. Olivia is on the line from Fishhook with a question. Welcome to the show, Olivia.
Thank you. I bought some dried olives from a wine firm a couple of months ago, and I tried them in a recipe, but they were still hard. And I decided I didn't know what to do with these things, so I boiled them in a pot for about 40, 45 minutes to an hour. And they're still in the water, but they're still not that soft. What do I do with them? Should I put them in a brine and try and pickle them, or what?
Well, dried olives are, they're dehydrated. So that's why they're so hard. They've got no moisture left in them. What I would have done is maybe put them into some olive oil. So put the olive oil or oil on the heat, then bring it to sort of a simmer, take it off the heat, add the olives to that oil, and then just leave them to steep for maybe 3 days. And, you know, it'll return that moisture to them. The fact that you say that you've boiled them and they still are quite dry, I don't think they're ever not going to be dry, if that's the case. I would maybe try using, chop them up really fine and maybe, you know, toss them with some breadcrumbs and use them as a battering or a coating for chicken or for fish or something like that. I guess if they're too hard to eat, then you wouldn't put them into salads or anything. But what about cooking them in a tagine or adding them to a stew of some sort, just to add that olive flavor, and maybe even taking them out once the stew is ready to eat?
Okay, maybe I'll try that. I just thought maybe I could lump them into a kind of a brine and hopefully that might improve.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you tried boiling them and that didn't really work. I don't think a brine's going to help you much.
Okay, Olivia, thanks so much. Interesting dilemma. That's not a common predicament to be in. Right, to the person asking for ideas for Christmas lunch, I'm going to ask you to hold on to that question until next week, because we are doing a special segment on ideas for the Christmas meal in the food segment next week. So I'm going to ask you just to hold on to that one. In the meantime, interesting SMS to 31567 asking, how would you make a nice cream for lactose intolerant cooking? Ooh. Now, obviously, it's not cream, because cream, you can't get a lactose-free cream. Well, but coconut cream, soy milk, something like that?
Well, you often find as well thing goat milk products. Mm-hmm. So if you can find a goat cream, maybe the lactose is lower or less or whatever. Because usually people who are lactose intolerant can actually have things like yogurt, and they can have goat milk products.
Okay.
So it's a matter of looking. But if you want a complete dairy substitute, I think coconut cream or coconut milk is fantastic. You also get that Orly Whip, which is also a dairy-free cream, if you will.
I haven't tasted that in years, but yes, it's been around for as long as I have, I think. Okay, I hope that's given you some food for thought. Maybe somebody listening is a lactose-free eater and has any other suggestions for that listener. Please do pop us an SMS to 31567. Christmas is not Christmas, says somebody on the WhatsApp line, without musicians bringing out their Christmas records, wearing white clothes on the cover, and don't forget the Boney M. I tried to forget Boney M. I tried to make my life a Boney M-free zone for as long as possible into the festive season, but I always am defeated. It will not happen on this show, or it might happen on this show, but only after I've gone on leave. Okay, that's a deal. Okay, Stacey asking, is it okay to use salted butter in a recipe that stipulates unsalted, and should I adjust anything else if I do?
Yes, you can use salted butter, even if the recipe asks for unsalted. Just make sure that you don't put in the additional salt. So usually for cake recipes, for example, we always say use unsalted butter, but then we always, with the dry ingredients, add a teaspoon or so of salt. Okay. Because salt is a flavor enhancer, and it sort of, you know, helps everything taste more like itself, if you will. So just make sure you don't put in the extra salt if your butter's already salted.
Okay, thanks, Stacey. Thanks for your question. We're not going to be able to squeeze in any more calls. We're only going to be able to say goodbye to Zola Nene and wishing you a very happy festive season, happy times with your family. I hope you're going to get some time off to chill after a hectic year that you've had.
I am. I'm looking forward to spending time with my family. My sister's pregnant. I'm going to be an aunt soon. Congrats. So maybe we'll get a baby for Christmas.
That would be wonderful. Just remember not to serve it with gravy on the side. Okay. Just kidding. Zola, all the best. That's lovely news, and congrats to the whole family. I hope it's a very special season. And we'll see you in the new year.
Thank you so much, Pippa.
Thanks so much, Zola Nene. And thank you to our sponsors, sushi2go.za. One way to have gourmet quality sushi at home is to hire your own sushi chef. But if that is all too much yen for your sushi yearning, here's some great news. Now Cape Town sushi lovers can have restaurant quality sushi delivered to their door from sushi2go. Download the app sushi2go.za or go to sushi2go.co.za, place your order, and select your delivery date and time. Every order is made fresh. Healthy living begins with healthy eating. So download the Sushi2go.za app now.